Cases submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Adams against Texas. Proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. We are dealing in this case with the right of a state to exclude prospective jurors from a capital case solely because of their attitudes or feelings about the death penalty. By statute, that is Section 1231B of the Texas Penal Code, Texas, in our opinion, has impermissibly broadened the base of exclusion beyond the parameters established by the Witherspoon Doctrine. And to the extent that Witherspoon does not allow the exclusion of any juror because of personal feelings about the death penalty, unless there is unmistakable, irrevocable commission on part of the prospective juror to vote against death, 1231B impedes upon Witherspoon to the extent that it allows the exclusion of a juror for a reason less than that described in Witherspoon. As proof of our position, we submit that any time a juror is qualified under Witherspoon and says, I can in a proper case and under the right circumstances vote death, whenever such a juror is excluded under state law solely because of the juror's feelings about capital punishment, the juror is excluded on a broader basis than provided in Witherspoon.
You're suggesting that there's a gray zone of some kind here where a juror, prospective juror, might be influenced by the fact that a death penalty was involved, or on the other hand, might not be.
I'm suggesting that as long as a juror is willing to state, I can vote death in the right case, that juror is qualified vis-a-vis his feelings about the death penalty.
Well, by the right case, taking that phrase, does that mean the right case as he sees it, or the right case is within the framework of the instructions of the court?
It means the right case under the evidence, within the framework of the instructions given by the court, and as he views the facts, because he is a personal representative of the community, and it is he who must express the community conscience. And under the guided jury discretion that's specifically provided for under the Texas capital punishment scheme, the jury has the discretion to utilize what evidence and facts is made available. And by answering the three questions, knowing what the effect of those answers explicitly is, the jury exercises that community conscience. Thus, Witherspoon requires that that base defined in Witherspoon apply to jury selection in the state of Texas. Now, the state has constructed a theoretical model upon which it hopes to convince this court that 1231B stands for a proposition that even the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals has disowned. The state argues and agrees with us that Witherspoon does apply in Texas. I take that to dispose of question number one under the grant of cert. So we go to the next question, and the state argues that Witherspoon is not violated in this case and theoretically in any other case in Texas, because the real purpose of 1231B is to exclude those jurors who are affected to the extent that they will allow their personal feelings to influence their vote. And that's not what 1231B says, and that's not what the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals has construed 1231B to say. In fact, the Court of Criminal Appeals has said just the opposite. A juror who states under oath, I will answer the questions honestly, I will answer the three punishment questions truthfully, I will put aside whatever reservations I may have about capital punishment when I answer those three questions. That does not rehabilitate a prospective juror who has already said, I will be affected by the existence of the death penalty in this case. So clearly, the Court of Criminal Appeals has rejected what this Court suggested could exist in Lockett versus Ohio. That is, it is fair to excuse from jury service any prospective juror who says, I can't follow the law. And Witherspoon pretty much said the same thing.
How do you apply that to Juror White, who was examined in the appendix at the upper pages, 20, 25, 27, somewhere in there?
Juror White specifically qualified under Witherspoon on page 26, in our opinion, and was then asked on page 27, may I, from your answers, are you saying that this mandatory sentence of death or life would affect your deliberations on the issues of fact in the case, including the three questions, yes, sir? And then if you go on to page 28 and 29.
Well, didn't he have a little more there? Juror White said, I think I believe in capital punishment, but I don't want to have anything to do with it. Is that clear? Those are all his words.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
Does that suggest that he doesn't want to impose it?
It may suggest it, but I think that Juror White was not absolutely disqualified under Witherspoon. Juror White never indicated that there would be an automatic vote against death.
Well, then look at his answer at the bottom of 27 with the question and his answer at the top of 28.
It's still equivocal. And the important thing is that on the one hand, the state says in its brief, we really don't have to concern ourselves about the ultimate issue because the juror writes yes answers or no answers, and it's the judge who sets the punishment. And at the same time, Juror White says, could you set aside your feelings and vote for the death penalty either directly or indirectly? I guess I could. You have to vote the question, the answers to the questions honestly, irregardless of what you think the penalty should be. Do you think you can do that? Yes. If the facts and circumstances justified it, yes. So under state theory number one, Juror White is eminently qualified. But under state theory number two, which is inconsistent with number one, Juror White is not qualified. And it's difficult from an analysis of their positions to determine which theory it is that they want this court to apply.
After the last answer of the juror that you've just referred to, Juror White said it would probably affect me in my deliberations. Then the judge said, would it be fair then to say that you cannot give us your assurance that you would not be affected by the punishment of life or death in deliberating on the facts of this case? That is correct, the juror said. That is correct.
Yes, sir. And the one thing that we have not addressed ourselves to at all in briefs, perhaps not enough anyway, is the problem of the word affect. And it's something which, unfortunately, the Court of Criminal Appeals has refused to address itself to. Because what does the word affect mean? The statute doesn't define it. The courts won't define it. And I think a fair reading of the appendix and a fair reading of the voir dire examination in this case clearly indicates that what happens is that a prosecutor defines it for a juror before asking him the critical question called for by 1231B.
But both of the two questions just asked you by the Chief Justice were posed by the court and not by the prosecuting attorney.
I don't think it matters whether the court uses 1231B in violation of Witherspoon or whether it's the prosecutor. It's the defendant who is injured by a violation of Witherspoon, and just as in Witherspoon itself, it was the court who wholesale excluded jurors that voiced conscientious scruples against the death penalty.
Well, supposing all we had was the colloquy on page 28 of the appendix, the question by the court. All right, would it be fair then to say that you cannot give us your assurance that you would not be affected by the punishment of life or death in deliberating the fact issues in the case? Juror White, that's correct.
And the case rests on that?
That was the sole colloquy that the court had with Juror White or anybody else had with Juror White. Do you think it would have been a violation of the federal constitution to exclude Juror White for cause?
Most assuredly. Juror White has not said anything which prevents Juror White from performing her duties under Texas law as a juror in a capital case, unless you accept the validity of 1231B as being the end-all question to test the qualification of a juror.
Well, if the next question is then, though, what do you mean by effect? Well, I'm very likely to be very sympathetic, and in case of a tie, or if I'm really in doubt, I'm going to vote in favor of the defendant, just because I'm against the death penalty. Would
Your
that
Honor,
add
that,
anything to you?
It hurts me.
No, but could
that
the,
makes
could
all
the, could the juror then be excluded?
That makes all the difference in the world. That brings the case within Lockett, where the juror says.
Well, then if the juror said. If the juror had earlier said, well, I think I can answer the questions truthfully and faithfully without regard to my feelings about the death penalty, but ultimately had said what I just suggested he said, then his answers would be just inconsistent, wouldn't they?
They would. They clearly would.
And yet you think it is not inconsistent between his earlier answers that he could answer these questions fairly and his later answer that, well, my opposition to the death penalty will affect my verdict. You don't think those are inconsistent?
I think that they are inconsistent, and I think the only solution is the same solution that the Fifth Circuit proposed in Burns versus Estelle. There must be continuing inquiry made of that juror to attempt to find out which of the inconsistent positions is the strong position. But
this was the last one anyway, wasn't it? And it was the one the judge... The one the judge chose to believe.
Juror White?
Yes.
Wasn't the last juror, no.
Well, no, but I mean, this was the last question on Juror White.
Yes. Now, our position on 1231B is that it attempts to statutorily codify a single question which can be used to satisfy the Witherspoon standard, but it doesn't go far enough. What it should do is define effect. What it should do is come up with a second question or a second phrase as suggested by Mr. Justice White. Will this affect your deliberations to the extent that you will not vote honestly, that you will not follow the law, that you will not be truthful? If 1231B said that, or if the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals elected to construe 1231B that way, then I think our position would be far, far weaker.
Do you think it should force a juror to say, no, I will not be truthful? This is a little bit like a lot of the polling processes. The answer is determined by the question, if you put it the way you put it.
I think the answers are determined by the questions in the voir dire examination in this case, very clearly, because if you have a person on the witness stand, voir dire examination. And the pattern is the same in all of these cases, not only in the Adams case, but all of them. Mr. or Mrs. Juror, what are your feelings about the death penalty? I have some reservations about it. I know that the law provides for it, but I personally don't want to be involved. Well, our law provides that you have to answer this question. Now, taking into account your personal feelings against the imposition of the death penalty, the fact that you would not really want to participate in the decision-making process leading to the taking of a man's life, can you state under oath that that will not affect your deliberations? I don't think any self-searching person is going to say anything but, of course it will affect my deliberations.
Then does he belong on the jury?
Without knowing what that person means, he certainly is not subject to exclusion, whether or not
he certainly wouldn't have meant that I'm be more likely to vote guilt because I'm opposed to the death penalty. He couldn't have meant that.
Isn't the most likely meaning of effect the second question that Justice White put to you a moment ago, that it will affect him in favor of resolving doubts in favor of the defendant that he would not otherwise resolve under the judge's charge? Or?
No, I think the voir dire examination shows that a number of the venirmen questioned interpreted the word effect to mean a heightened sensitivity to the case. I would want to be sure. In other words, I'm not going to treat this as a petty theft case. This is a capital case. We're talking about a man's life. And I take this to be a heightened sensitivity situation where I am going to respond carefully.
Well, do you think that has to be developed with any juror, that he's going to treat a death case differently from a petty theft case?
Do I think it has to be developed?
Yes. Do you think that needs to be developed the way you suggested? And then interpret the answers as merely expressing a heightened sensitivity?
It is the only way to ascertain whether or not the juror interprets the word effect as meaning heightened sensitivity or interprets the word effect as meaning I can't follow the law. We have no...
How about Curtis Williams, page 32, the court. Would you be influenced by the death penalty part to keep you from voting yes? The witness, I think I would be influenced by the death penalty. Sounds to me like he's saying, yes, I would be influenced in a way that would keep me from voting yes. What do you think about that?
I think, Your Honor, that Mr. Williams is a very weak example of our position.
Well, that's a good way of asking.
What about a juror who's asked on voir dire about the statutory questions and responds they're all in favor of capital punishment and gives the same sort of effect answers in the defense challenges for cause? Now, would you say that the court could turn down that sort of a challenge because all it meant was that his sensitivity was heightened?
You're saying, I'm not sure I follow the question, you're saying that if the defense challenge for cause under 1231B?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think the challenge for cause exists in the law. I think 1231B provides for a challenge for cause that is unconstitutional, and it wouldn't matter who made the challenge. It would still be a violation of Witherspoon.
But certainly a defendant in Texas has challenges for cause, do they not?
Certainly. But
and
I think...
couldn't one of them be based on the way the particular venireman answered the three questions in the statute under consideration?
Theoretically, that is possible, but from a practical standpoint, it has never happened to my knowledge. It certainly didn't happen in this case, and in the other 1231B cases that have been tried in Texas, it hasn't happened, according to people who have read those records and advised me. It's always been a prosecution tool, consistently.
Mr. Bruder, let me put it another way. Is it your position that 1231B will operate to exclude prospective witnesses that the Witherspoon rule would not exclude?
Exactly.
Well, and that the Witherspoon rule said could not be excluded.
That's, upon that's any broader basis.
That's what Witherspoon
exactly.
stood for.
Exactly.
It held that jurors could not be excluded for cause on anything less than what was defined in Witherspoon.
Once they meet the threshold test, they are allowed to go on that jury and cannot be struck for any reason which is based upon their personal feelings about the death penalty.
Well, Witherspoon didn't involve how it would affect their guilt or innocence vote, did it?
Yes, it did.
Yes, it did, Your Honor.
It said something about that.
It said,
oh, I know,
unless...
But it didn't say that it was wrong to exclude the juror if he conceded that it might make him more likely to vote for innocence.
I think the second prong of the Witherspoon test recites that unless it is shown that the juror will never vote for death or that his feelings will cause him to vote a certain way on the issue of guilt-innocence, he is then subject to exclusion.
Well, not, it's less than cause him to vote a certain way. It said that his feelings would prevent him from making an impartial
decision. Making an impartial decision, making him biased.
On the question of guilt-innocence.
And what we deal with in application with respect to 1231B is that in almost every instance, 1231B is aimed at the punishment questions. And it is used to exclude jurors who cannot vote death. It's never used or rarely used in regards to their ability to fairly resolve the guilt-innocence issues.
Mr. Bruder, I want to be sure about one other thing. If the court should decide in your favor here, what is the remedy? Does it go back for a new trial on guilt or innocence or merely on sentencing?
Your Honor, the remedy as far as this court is concerned is to vacate the judgment insofar as it imposes the death sentence. Under Texas law...
So you've answered my question only on the sentence, not on the basic conviction.
Right. We have not argued and we have not taken any position that the jury selection in this case affected the guilt-innocence determination.
What would happen to the Texas court if we vacated the death sentence?
The Texas court would have no alternative but to either send it back for a new trial or, if the governor elects to commute his sentence to life, then he has no recourse, which has been done in the past.
You mean a new trial on guilt or innocence?
Yes. Yes. Under Texas law, any time punishment is assessed by a jury and there is a defect in the punishment process, the entire case is reversed and it's sent back from square one.
So if we just vacate the death sentence, there's a new trial?
High probability.
Yes.
And yet that's just a quirk of Texas law.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, actually, we'd only send it back for further proceedings, not inconsistent
with the opinion.
And that would be up to the Texas courts to say whether it's a new trial on guilt or innocence.
That's correct.
The prospect is it would be.
There's a very good prospect that there would be, and the only thing I can say is that historically, following the 1972 death penalty decision, the governor commuted almost all of the people on death row.
And that avoids a new trial on guilt or innocence.
Right. That is, the legality of that has been challenged and upheld.
But what you're saying, then, is that for federal law purposes, a decision here in your favor does not infect the validity of the basic conviction.
That is correct.
And it's only because of a Texas law quirk that it does.
That is correct. I would like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. The Court is well aware of what's not at issue in this case, the constitutionality of death penalty in general, and the constitutionality specifically of the general Texas statutes for adjudication of guilt and imposition of the death penalty have previously been upheld. Therefore, the only issue before us today is fairness in the jury selection procedures. Now,
General Becker, do you agree with your opponent that the validity of the conviction is not an issue? It's just the death penalty that we're...
Yes, as a constitutional matter, that's correct, Your Honor. Now, he has correctly characterized what Mr. Justice Blackmun has called a quirk of Texas law, that we would not be able simply to resentence him, as far as I know, under our procedures. He would be entitled to an entirely new trial on guilt or innocence under Texas law unless the governor were to act in the manner that he has described. He's accurate upon that point. Now, I want to make perfectly clear the holding that the state of Texas is asking the court to make today. It is, in essence, exactly what the Court of Criminal Appeals has come out, has turned out in the matter, and that is that we have side by side Witherspoon and Section 1231B of our penal code, and that jurors who are excluded upon either basis, consistently and accurately, that would comply with the Constitution.
Well, the problem with your statement is that Witherspoon said that jurors could not be excluded for cause unless they unmistakably made clear that their disbelief in capital punishment would prevent them, in all cases, from imposing it.
Yes.
Not could be excluded on either basis, that they could not be excluded constitutionally. That's yes. What Witherspoon held.
Well, Your Honor, but Section 1231B is not aimed at all at excluding jurors solely because they are against the death penalty. It's neutral upon that basis. It's aimed as much at excluding jurors who are in favor of the death penalty. It's entirely neutral with respect to that particular attitude about the death penalty. What it is not neutral about is jurors who can be biased in either direction. Now, before we had Furman, Mr. Counsel for Petitioner made a statement that if a juror states that he is not unalterably opposed to the death penalty, then he should be qualified to sit, period, under Witherspoon. Although that may be true and was highly applicable to the pre-Furman type statutes that gave juries basically unbridled discretion in the imposition of the death penalty, it shouldn't be true anymore. Such a juror might well be an extremely poor juror for the defendant or for the state under Texas law, because he no longer has unbridled discretion. The fact questions that they had in Lockett are now in Texas at the punishment stage of trial. And really, I don't think it makes any difference at all what the juror's feelings are about the death penalty, either pro or con, under the Texas statutes and Texas law. And certainly the prosecutor and the judge in this case seem to be of the opinion that it made very little difference. In other words, the common pattern in the voir dire was to ask the juror what his attitudes were about the death penalty. And if the juror said, well, I'm unalterably opposed to the death penalty and I could never vote to impose it, typically, in almost every instance, there was no objection upon Witherspoon grounds or that the juror was disqualified for service. In one case where there was an objection that he was disqualified, the court said, well, tell him about our statutory scheme. The prosecutor would then go on to explain, well, even though you could never vote for the death penalty, and I respect that belief, let me explain the Texas scheme. There are two distinctive features of it. In the first place, we have fact questions at the guilt or innocence stage of trial. And you will never actually have to write life or death on a piece of paper. You will never have to raise your hand and vote that the defendant lives or the defendant dies. Instead, you deliberate the questions of fact. Now, even though your feelings are very strong against the death penalty, could you fairly deliberate the questions of fact, knowing that you never have to vote for death or for life, actually, directly? Some jurors said, well, yes, I could do that. And what the state submits is that those jurors are qualified to sit on a Texas jury. Under Witherspoon, the doctrine of Witherspoon, they might have been excluded from jury service. And yet 1231B saves them for jury service, and we don't think that we need submit statistical studies to show that many of those jurors will be favorably disposed toward the defendant.
So I suppose you would suggest then that Texas really, it's just, Witherspoon is just beside the point in a sentencing scheme such as you have, and although you purport to be following Witherspoon as a parallel track, you really shouldn't have to.
Precisely so, Mr. Justice White, precisely so. It's a round peg in a square hole. And it will lead, what it will do is, if we followed Witherspoon and not Section 1231B, what we're going to have on Texas juries, and indeed, those jurors, many of the jurors that he complains about, are people who would have been perfectly qualified under a pre-Furman, unbridled discretion type of statute. They're people who, he notes that several of the jurors excluded were in favor of the death penalty all the way. Mahon, Jensen, Coyle, and probably McDonald was rehabilitated insofar as she was ultimately in favor of the death penalty.
Mr. Becker, may I interrupt you? I had understood from your brief, perhaps I didn't read it correctly, that you were conceding that Witherspoon does apply in Texas in light of the new statute.
Your
brief says that categorically.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now it seems to me you're arguing something quite different.
Well, I don't mean to be arguing something quite different. Perhaps the confusion comes in with the phrase, does Witherspoon apply to Texas? What I have said is, at the outset, that I think that in those death penalty trials in Texas, where Witherspoon was used as the basis of qualifying jurors, that test, that those convictions and death penalties are all right under the Constitution. But I'm also...
On page 33 of your brief, you state that the Texas Criminal Court of Appeals has held that Witherspoon is applicable to capital cases in Texas.
Yes, sir.
Now, are they decisions decided since the statute that became effective January 1, 1974 was enacted?
They're under the new statute.
They're under the new statute?
Yes.
Well, then how can you argue that under Texas law, Witherspoon does not apply?
Well, what the Court of Appeals has held is that either that a trial conducted in compliance with Witherspoon or in compliance with 1231B comports with the Constitution. What we're saying is we agree with that statement, but the 1231B is a more fair, a more equitable, and a superior way to conduct a voir dire jury examination in Texas than in Witherspoon.
And, of course, it's our province, is it not, as opposed to the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, to have the final say as to whether a decision of this court does or does not apply to a particular factual situation.
Quite so.
Court.
But the idea is growing, Your Honor. In our brief, we stated the only expression in Texas law that we knew of from the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals for the theoretical construct we've made is that of Judge Odom dissenting in a Havala case. Actually, I probably overlooked the dissenting opinion of another judge in that case. And 12 days ago, yet a third judge dissenting in a death penalty case stated that because I am persuaded that the Witherspoon holding per se is no longer a viable measure of qualifying jurors in the bifurcated proceedings in a capital case, he dissents from the majority opinion.
Don't you have to be arguing you can't comply with that? In no one case can you comply with both.
It would be difficult.
And that you don't think the Court of Criminal Appeals said that you had to comply with both.
No.
Either one.
Yes, sir. If a juror is excluded under either one. Now, personally, I'm standing before the court to say that I think 1231B is the fairer way to go about it. It may be, and the difficult point of our argument...
But you do concede, I gather, then, that 1231 would exclude some people that Witherspoon would not.
Yes, Your Honor. Not only...
Or that it would qualify some people that Witherspoon would. Which way will it do? Both.
Well, yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor,
and
both.
Witherspoon would say, as it did say, mm-hmm. could not be eliminated from the jury for cause.
Well, yes, Your Honor.
That's what Witherspoon said. It was a negative decision.
Mm-hmm.
It said this state is prohibited from excusing from a jury for cause veneerman unless they make clear the following.
Well, the focal point of the inquiry is quite different,
didn't,
Your Honor.
Witherspoon didn't say what people could be. It said what people could not be.
Yes, Your Honor. But I think that the focal point of what 1231B analysis is quite different from Witherspoon, and necessarily so because of our statute. A juror who was qualified under Witherspoon but who is a convicted felon under Texas law is disqualified from service.
Well, I suppose he is if he's the defendant's brother, too.
Yes, and for all sorts of other reasons.
Witherspoon we didn't have anything to do with that.
Well, yes, sir, I know, but I'm saying that 1231B itself is a point of inquiry that is sufficiently different from Witherspoon that it should stand as an independent basis for exclusion of jurors if it is properly applied. Now, one point that we certainly admit is that 1231B is a statute that is susceptible of great abuse. There's no question about that. If a juror said, well, I don't like the death penalty, but if it were really an extreme case, I could vote for it, I suppose. And the prosecutor says, I can't exclude this juror because of unalterable opposition. I'll just come right in and hit her with the next question, the statutory question. And she says, well, I suppose I would be affected. Then a much more difficult case is presented. It's possible that the prosecutor, by not explaining the meaning of the terms, has succeeded in subverting Witherspoon by using it in this manner.
Has anybody, any court in Texas, certainly the legislature has not, has any court in Texas explained the meaning of the word affect?
The Court of Criminal Appeals has not spoken upon the meaning of the word affect. Now, I think that this petitioner's death penalty conviction will stand or fall not upon what any Texas statute says, nor upon what the Court of Criminal Appeals says, but upon what was done at his trial. That will govern the outcome. And what was done at his trial is what is the way the court and the prosecutor explain the 1231B question.
What's your understanding of the meaning of the word affect in 1231?
That it essentially that a juror would be unbiased on the fact questions and deliberations that are at the punishment phase of trial.
You mean affect means impair or distort?
To be biased in deliberations,
well,
to be unfair.
It's a verb, so it means impair or distort,
yes,
or bias or
yes,
skew.
Yes, Your Honor. That it means that that it, in its most extreme form, it means the juror would lie. This question was posed over and over again. Many jurors admitted that they would. The question were posed, especially, I would look at the jurors who were in favor of the death penalty, who were excluded upon the basis of 1231B, Mahon, Jensen, and Coyle, to where they were jurors who said, well, we like the death penalty, and then when the prosecutor explained the sentencing scheme, explained the questions, explained the aggravating and mitigating factors, explained that their deliberations would be closely guided, the reaction that they got from those jurors was, do you mean I wouldn't have, in effect, do you mean I wouldn't have free choice? Do you mean it wouldn't be completely up to me? And the prosecutor would say, that's right. He might have said, that's the way it used to be under Furman, but the Supreme Court said that that tends to be arbitrary and capricious, and that it's unfair way to qualify a jury, it's unfair way to inflict a death penalty upon someone. We don't do it that way anymore. Your discretion must be guided. And then jurors Mahon and Jensen, and things in the portions of the voir dire cited in our brief, say, well, surely if I were of the opinion, for whatever reason, that the defendant should live or die, there would be one of those questions that would go the way I wanted it to go. And the prosecutor would say, no, not necessarily. The questions may lead you to a result that is actually against the way that, in the abstract, you feel that, in a way, apart from how you feel the whatever it is the penalty the defendant should receive. And then they would reply, well, in that case, I don't believe I can take the oath. They said, in effect, I refuse or I cannot swear that my deliberations will be guided in the way the law says they must be guided. They were jurors who would have been perfectly qualified under the pre-Furman statutes, but they're disqualified under 1231B, and we submit that the jurors, that the defendant's jury is more fair for that result.
Mr. Becker, I notice you, the whole time during your speech, you've always said, prosecutor, doesn't defense counsel get in this, too?
Yes, Your Honor.
Does he do anything in Texas?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, the question I really want to ask, if we have a juror that is under Witherspoon, can he be disqualified under the Texas statute?
If he is qualified under Witherspoon?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Your Honor, he can be qualified under Witherspoon and disqualified under the Texas statute. The converse is also true. He can be disqualified under Witherspoon and qualified under the Texas statute. And in this case, precisely that thing happened to one juror. He appears in the charts at the conclusion of our brief, and it's a mistake in our charts. I hope it's the only one that I made. He is listed as a juror excluded upon the basis of Witherspoon or 1231B, Mr. Smotherman. Actually, that's not true. He was rehabilitated in the manner that I described and was excused for a different reason. But the testimony, the way that the voir dire of that juror was conducted to me is a microcosm of all the arguments that we have. And I'd like to take just 1 minute to go over it with the court. He stated he was disqualified under Witherspoon quite clearly at 4954 of the voir dire. He stated he could never vote to impose the death penalty because of his feelings against it. He personally could not participate, or as the question was asked, you, to your way of thinking, could never ever, as you presently feel, could never ever vote for the death penalty. Answer, that's right. I don't believe. The prosecutor went on to ask him the statutory questions, which is the way that all jurors were handled in this voir dire. And he also agreed that he had to say that I believe I couldn't answer them all yes if it would send him to his death. Page 4959. At that point, Mrs. James, the defense counsel, took over, and she rehabilitated him upon the basis of Section 1231B.
She explained to him Texas law in more detail, explained to him and asked him to go over his feelings, and the next 20 pages are a fascinating study for us. They show the agony that the juror himself was going through in deciding this question. Many of these jurors have never thought about the death penalty before they're placed in a voir dire context. Perhaps this man had not. But as he went through it and as she took him at page 4969 and 4970, it is like a light dawning in his mind when she asked him, explains the procedure, and says at first, "I do not, no matter what, I don't believe in the death penalty at all. That's what I want you to understand." Question by Mrs. James, "You would completely ignore the facts and automatically answer the questions no, regardless of the facts in any case?" He answers, "I would not do that." She says, "Thank you. Then would there be a feeling in your mind that you would keep an open mind and you could take affirmative action answering those questions if you ever get them, which might result or would result in the imposition of the death penalty in the case? In other words, could you answer the questions as questions honestly?" "Yes, I think, I believe I could." And he was rehabilitated, and the judge stated that he was qualified to be on the Texas jury, in spite of the fact that he could have been excluded under Witherspoon earlier. And defense counsel rehabilitated him using that statute. So I think that the statute is available for the benefit of the defendant also.
Did that juror serve?
No, Your Honor. Eventually he was excluded for another reason.
General Becker, can I ask you a question about the statutory language? 1231B says they've got to be informed, jurors have to be informed about the death penalty. Then it says a prospective juror shall be disqualified from serving as a juror unless he states under oath that the mandatory penalty of death or imprisonment for life will not affect his deliberations on any issue of fact. Supposing the juror is asked the question in the language of the statute, and the juror responds by saying, "Well, since it's a death penalty, I know I would scrutinize every witness as closely as I could, and I would think about it a long time before I came to a conclusion. So the answer is yes, it would affect my deliberations." Must that juror be disqualified?
I have problems with the disqualification of that juror. Now, it all depends.
Doesn't the statute plainly require disqualification in that case?
Yes, Your Honor, depending upon the interpretation that's given the word effect.
Well, she just answers the question no, and then she explains her answer. And the statute requires an I may have the negative and affirmative turned around, but in any event, if she gives the wrong answer, it seems to me the statute says you must be disqualified.
With no further explanation of the word effect. I have great problems with that voir dire. I have no problems with the voir dire that was conducted.
But don't you then have a problem with the statute as it's written? You want to redefine the word effect and say, well, it really means something else.
No, Your Honor, I don't want to redefine it. I want to view it in the manner it was defined at this petitioner's trial. And as I say, it makes no difference what the Court of Criminal Appeals said in some opinion, or ultimately, it makes no difference what you and I might agree
the only thing
that's
critical under the statute is unless the prospective juror states under oath, and say the juror just can't do that for the reason that the juror interprets the word effect in the way that most people would interpret the word effect.
Yes, well, the way that such a voir dire could, the conviction might be upheld is to view the word effect that everyone understood that it meant that you could not be unbiased in your deliberations. If it's interpreted in that manner, as perhaps most people would, then the conviction would be saved. But if you interpret the word effect to mean that simply to scrutinize the evidence more closely, then there's a problem that's involved. I think it's up to the trial courts and the prosecutors to explain to the jury the meaning of the word effect.
But they never do. Do they ever do that?
They did it in this case, Your Honor. They did it at length with every
jury. They explained the word effect?
Absolutely. They explained it in terms of, well, I don't think I would say, Your Honor, at no point did the prosecutor or the judge say, well, now I will define the word effect as it's used in the statute. They did not. But they explained the process. And it's the process that's important, not the definition of the word. And they said the process is you'll get the fact questions. You must answer them honestly based upon the evidence, not on some whim you have, not on some subjective conclusion that you've made during the trial, but on the way the law states you must decide the questions, that that's what you must do. And that if you cannot do that, that means that you would be affected. That's the way it was explained.
Well, then, I can see how that worked out within some of these jurors, but give me the language on Juror White, where she conceded something about what she could or couldn't do
All right, Your Honor. At page 20 of my brief, which I suppose is I have it marked as 1539 to 42, voir dire. I'm sorry, I don't know what page of the appendix it is.
What page do you read?
20.
Okay.
And actually, it starts on 19 and 20. 19 is the explanation of the law and the statutes, as I just explained them to Mr. Justice Stevens. Then on page 20, the very clear explanation by the court. You cannot go back in the jury room and say, well, I want him to get life imprisonment, so I'm going to answer the questions. No. You have got to answer the questions the way the evidence tells you it ought to be answered, without any regard to what punishment would result. And in that context, she answered that she would be effective. Now,
you're standing, I take it, on how the statute was applied in each case in relation to the questions put and the answers given.
Yes, Your Honor. That's
you really can't escape the proposition that was put to you that affect might mean something quite different from what it does in the specific cases set out here.
Yes, that's true, Your Honor.
But you're only we just got this case.
That's correct.
But you think this necessarily means that what she's saying, I will be affected, and that means to you, because of the form of the question, the context, that she was saying that she could not say that she would come to her conclusions based on the evidence.
Yes, Your Honor. When you read the voir dire as a whole, you will see we're not talking about some random question just kind of thrown in at some point that hopefully the juror understood what they were driving at. We're talking about the entire focus of the voir dire. We're talking about literally pages of explanation of the statute and of everything I've been talking about with each denariman, with each prospective juror. And it was unmistakable, in my opinion, to those jurors that regardless of how Mr. Justice Stevens or any justice would define the word effect, or as the Fifth Circuit did in the Burns case, that in this case it was defined in the manner that I've described to those jurors. They couldn't have missed it.
Point of information. The language quoted on page 19 and 20 of your brief, is that in the appendix?
No, Your Honor, it is not. Whenever anything in my brief is also in the appendix, I followed it with an appendix cite, so it's not.
So we have to look at the original record to
get
the
Your
whole
Honor,
flavor of this.
Most certainly. And there are many parts of my brief where the portions that we've cited are not in the appendix. And yes, it will be necessary. Yes, Your Honor, it is. As a matter of fact, there are a number of other original records here in cases where petitions for writ of certiorari have been filed, raising this very question, this 1231B question. There were five of them filed in January, and those records are here in which the Witherspoon 1231B question was raised.
Why are the records here?
The court requested them.
Well, we called the records.
Yes, sir, from the court.
In all those questions. In all those cases?
Yes, sir.
And then denied cert, or they're held?
They're pending. Right. Yes, Your Honor. In three of those five cases where cert is pending, where the records were requested in January, the defendants, the petitioners, are raising the question not as the petitioner here is, but that, now as I read their petitions, but that jurors were excluded from their trials because of unalterable opposition to the death penalty, and the 1231B inquiry was not made. And is the petitioners complaining because 1231B was not invoked? And in my opinion, they have a stronger case than petitioner here today. But it rests for another day. In the case that we have, we feel, got him the best jury that was possible. Now, the only basis, I've explained that in my opinion, 1231B is going to create the fairer jury for the defendant than Witherspoon would. Why, then, would not the petitioners in those three cases I described, now pending before the court, be entitled to relief? And the only answer I can give to that is that even though the jury examinations in their cases were not as good as Petitioner Adams had, the Constitution, even in death penalty cases, does not require perfection, and that Witherspoon exclusion, which has been upheld by this court, is a sufficiently fair method of jury of a qualification of jurors that those convictions too would survive. One other question that I would attempt to give some guidance to the court upon is what effect upon the statutes of the other states a holding in our favor in the manner we've advocated today would have. There are 38 states, by my count, that now have a death penalty statute. Five of those have judge sentencing, so 33 still have death penalty sentencing by jurors. The common pattern, as the court well knows, is a set of aggravating and mitigating factors. As far as I know, no state has affirmatively experienced the Texas method of not having jurors actually vote on life or death, but merely answering the questions with known automatic results.
You say, so far as you know, no other state does that?
That's correct. Now, the statute of Washington State appears to allow for that, but there are no cases upon it yet. It's a newer statute, and there are other statutes that are ambiguous, but I have not read their case law as saying that it's certainly not as clear as in Texas, as far as I can tell. But the statutes of all 33 of those states would be quite amenable to a kind of 1231B qualification and rejection of a Witherspoon-type qualification if they so desired. It might have that effect. And as I say, if we've made the jump from Furman to Jurek, from the unbridled discretion statutes to the guided discretion statutes, it seems to me that the interests of justice and the interests of the defendant will best be served by having jurors who can swear that they are going to be fair on the questions of fact, that they will be fair in deliberating on the questions of fact, regardless of their feelings on the death penalty, and that will lead to a jury more expressive of the community conscience than the jury that petitioner contends he ought to have had at his trial.
Do you have anything further, Mr. Bruder?
Briefly.
It seems a shame to me somehow that if both Witherspoon and 1231B parallel each other, and the state contends 1231B is fairer, and the defendant contends Witherspoon is fair, that we can't provide for an election prior to trial and let the chips fall where they may based on that election. I think it's fair to say that this petitioner does not agree with the state that 1231B is in any sense of the word fair. There are two cases that I want to particularly point out to the court. Counsel talks about we have this word effect, but we don't want to define it. We simply want to throw it out there for the jury to consider, tell them the entire process, and then on that basis let them decide what they think it means and that 1231B is fair because of that. And yet in Havala 1, 532 Southwest 2nd, 294, former presiding Judge Morrison said that the court will presume that a juror's answers will be affected. The punishment answers will always be affected by the existence of a mandatory penalty of life or death.
Would your problem be cured, Mr. Bruder, if the judge on his own had instructed the jury that when I describe the statute to you using the word effect, what is meant by that is that the possibility of the death penalty will not lead me to vote not guilty in a case in which I otherwise might vote guilty. Would that take care of it? Effect, at least as the judge.
You're talking guilt-innocence. You're talking about the guilt-innocence phase as opposed to punishment. I think that may satisfy the second part of the Witherspoon standard on guilt-innocence, and I think a question could be formulated to follow up on 1231B that would satisfy the Witherspoon standard.
Well, now, if the court decided that the questions and the answers taken together showed that each of the jurors questioned understood that meaning of the word affect.
We're talking about such a subjective problem that I can't see how the court can do I think it will be difficult.
I don't know that it could either, but suppose the court did. Is the court free to make this evaluation on the basis of how the witness answered, or the juror, the lineman, answered the questions?
The court is free to do it, certainly. I think the court would have difficulty squaring that type of a rule with Witherspoon, as well as inviting a very tremendous caseload and an increase in its docket, because every death penalty case from Texas would then become a case that's automatically reviewable by this court on the basis of 1231B versus Witherspoon violations.
So what you're saying is that we should go with you and force the state of Texas to amend its statute.
Amend its statute, or, Your Honor, construe the statute, which I suspect is coming right around the corner. And the other case that I wanted to bring to your attention is Russell versus State, to which counsel alluded. The number is 63715. It was delivered on March 12, 1980. And in the dissenting opinion to which counsel alluded, he left off a phrase that I want to direct to the court's attention. Judge Clinton said, Witherspoon is no longer a viable measure of qualifying jurors in the bifurcated proceedings in a capital case, in that they do not directly assess punishment, and that a good deal more manifestation than merely acknowledging the magic phrase of 1231B should be required for disqualification. The record must be made clear that the juror understands the word affect to be a synonym for bias, for predisposition to vote in a certain way. And then 1231B satisfies the Witherspoon standard, and regardless of whether you call it 1231B or the Texas Witherspoon procedure, it's constitutional.
When was 1231B enacted?
I believe it was enacted as a different penal code article shortly after the Furman decision, then readopted in the 1974 penal code. I think it was Article 673.
So it was reconsidered and readopted, most recently enacted after the establishment in Texas of the legislative system that approved in the Jurek case.
Well, it was enacted along with the...
It's part and parcel of the Jurek legislation, type legislation. It was not
separate.
A historic survival from an earlier day.
It is not. It's part and parcel of the Jurek system. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted, and we'll hear arguments next in the state of Texas.